what I did was when I went to do the marketing degree, in order to still have access to a piano, I walked in to the primary school that was around the corner and said, how would you like me in every Wednesday afternoon to work with children doing music? So I actually taught, you know, very little ones in groups of six, doing rhythm games and singing, all voluntarily.
And all without any teacher training. This was just you
without
being
any
you.
Training. And when I look back and I think, crikey, you know, just walking in off the street.
Welcome back to the Topcast Teachers. It's Tim Topham here, and I'm delighted to be with you for another week. Thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot to me, and I'm only too happy to share these interviews with you. I absolutely delight in connecting with people and sharing great ideas with the world. As always, our show notes and transcript and all the links you need from today's episode will be over at topmusic.co/episode239. So how many of you guys are parents? If you're parents, then no doubt at some stage, getting your kids to eat veggies is a bit of a challenge. So today's episode is actually titled Hiding Your Musical Veggies with composer Karen Marshall. And in the episode, we're going to dive quite deeply into Karen's background and experience, because she's an unusual composer in that she had a complete break from music in a similar way to the way I did for about 10 years after university and had a career in a totally different field. She also had a late diagnosis of dyslexia as an adult, which impacted her and has changed how she's approached things. And now, of course, is a much loved composer and author of a number of different publications, which we'll be talking about in today's episode. Now, we're really excited because as part of today's interview, over in our Top Music Teachers Facebook group, we're going to be running a giveaway for the music books that we're talking about in today's episode. So there's two packs of music books. This is like hundreds of dollars worth of music. Firstly, the Get Set Piano Method. We've got the two main books plus supplementary music books, activity book. And we also, as a second prize, we've got her piano trainer series, which is five books. It's a huge collection worth well over $100. And we're going to be giving that away, but only if you're in our Facebook group. So head over to Facebook and search for Top Music Teachers Facebook group. If you're not sure how to find that, then head to the show notes page and we'll put a link there. So that's at topmusic.co/episode239. We'd love to get these amazing books in your hands. My guest today, Karen Marshall, is a best-selling author and classroom, peripatetic, and private music teacher. Karen trains extensively in the area of special needs. She firmly believes in giving children a sound music foundation and is passionate about bringing the joy of music to all. Welcome to the show, Karen Marshall.
Oh, thank you for having me, Tim. It's quite early here in the UK.
You've got up at 6:30, listeners. Karen's got up at 6:30 a.m. to be with you today. So I really do thank you for that. It's always fun playing around with time zones, particularly this time of the year when all the time zones change.
Absolutely. But it's lighter here in the evening now in the UK, so it's nice.
Mm. Well, look, most of our listeners will probably recognise your name and kind of know and love you for your compositions, being a fabulous composer of pedagogical music. But you've actually had a really roundabout career, and most people won't know that music is actually your second career. So today I want to explore your story a little bit more, because it does mirror mine in some ways of moving right away from music for a decade or more and then coming back to it with a really fresh perspective. So let's start at the beginning for you. Where did your own music lesson experience start?
Well, it started with the next door neighbour who'd actually trained at the Royal Northern. So I was very lucky. I had this superb piano teacher, and the UK is still very grade, you know, orientated.
Yep, exams.
I did my grade one with her and did very well. I did find reading music a challenge, but she was fantastic. And then she actually stopped piano teaching.
She retired, did she?
She retired. And my parents weren't particularly musical. They wanted their child to learn music, weren't particularly musical. So they found another teacher who was very challenged. in her ability to teach.
She was not a good teacher.
I would have to sight read my own pieces because she couldn't play them.
Oh, okay. What, even at low levels?
Not really.
Oh, dear. Okay.
It was an interesting experience, but she liked having, as she put it, a student that could just do it, which actually...
Okay.
And yeah, it was difficult, and it got to a stage where I was so frustrated, and this is a true story, my mother would vouch for it, that I locked myself in the bathroom and said, unless my mother rang this teacher and said I wasn't having lessons with her anymore, I wasn't coming out.
Oh, no. Hang on. Was that her, the teacher's bathroom, or your home?
No, my ours.
Your one, right,
so
okay.
I was in there.
It was a standoff.
Yeah, it was as this teenage girl locked in the bathroom waiting to hear my mother make the call.
Right. Okay. And did you get the call?
Yeah, she made the call, and then it was actually because I'd performed at an EPTA concert. So mm-hmm.
It's European Piano Teachers Association.
Yeah. So I'd been to a place in Ilkley and I'd performed. And there was a teacher there watching. And I knew who she was. She was very respected in the area, and a woman called Enid Alterbridge, and very close friends to the pedagogue Christine Brown, mm-hmm. who I later had lessons with when
right.
Enid died. And basically my mum rang her up and she said that she was over the moon to speak to her because she wanted to get hold of that student.
Oh, wow. That student being you.
Yeah, me, because she knew the teacher concerned, and she said, you know, I just thought she's got this really, you know, musical student, and she'd had some lessons with her, and she'd failed a diploma, a teaching diploma, several times, and,
right.
you know, and so she didn't really have space, but she made space for me, and that was transformational. You know, working with Enid Alterbridge was transformational. And in fact, Helen Reed, professor at the Guildhall, she also had Enid Alterbridge. And it wasn't just a piano lesson. It was a whole sort of experience. She would sit me down by the fire. She would talk to me about how my week was. She was incredibly caring, very loving. I would have to take her dog for the walk, old Tigger, who was quite lively and tricky, but you know. Yes, she was heavily involved in the original Leeds Piano Competition as well, was Enid.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could easily have ditched lessons and either quit or just kept on going yourself. I mean, it sounds like you were quite passionate about music. You just had the wrong teacher. But, I mean, that kind of experience could really signal the end of a musical experience for a young teenager, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was very tough. You know, it was difficult because, you know, I would fail the scale section of exams every time,
you know, through no fault of your own.
Well, I mean, I was diagnosed with dyslexia at 38, so there was difficulty there, but as soon as they were taught in a different way, there wasn't difficulty. And what happened was it was hands together scales. So I remember as this little girl having to put the hands together and it one hand doing one thing, another, and I just found it horrendous. And you know, I wasn't taught any of the pattern work or anything like that. It was, you know, just somebody shouting finger two now and this kind of thing. And you know, I don't mean to be, you know, she was absolutely doing her absolute best.
Yeah,
it was just that really I needed something else.
Absolutely. So how long did you stay with the good teacher? What age did you start wrapping things up then?
I had 5 years with the good teacher. I had 5 years. And even when I went to university, the first year of university studying marketing, I traveled back fortnightly and still had lessons with her.
Right.
Until she actually died. Then
that must have been sad.
Really sad, you know.
So you went off to do marketing. Now, why didn't you do music?
Because I massively struggled with A-level music.
Okay. So A-level is like the year 12, like the final year of school music,
year 13. And so I did very well at, you know, the 16 level at school, but I just, you know, the structuring of essays, the writing Bach chorales, you know.
It'd be hard for anyone.
It was just, and yeah, it was a real struggle. And so I was also very good at art. So if anybody sees my Twitter, they'll see my paintings, which I've come back to after 30 years, you know. So I was very creative and I just thought, oh, I'll go and do marketing. It's right. Creative and, you know, and so that's what I did. And yeah.
Did you do any teaching of younger children or anything when you were younger?
Yeah, what I did was when I went to do the marketing degree, in order to still have access to a piano, I walked in to the primary school that was around the corner and said, how would you like me in every Wednesday afternoon to work with children doing music? So I actually taught, you know, very little ones in groups of six, doing rhythm games and singing, all voluntarily.
And all without any teacher training. This was just you
without
being
any
you.
Teacher training. And when I look back and I think, crikey, you know, just walking in off the street, and they allowed me to go in with these children, you know. And then I would get the piano to practice on, you see.
Right. Okay. So you were doing that while you were studying, but then you went into your career, PR and marketing. So what kind of work were you doing and how long did you do that for?
Well, while I was doing the PR and marketing, I would pick up piano pupils in the office.
Okay.
So
is that the children of colleagues?
No, they're adults this time.
Ah, okay.
Adults. And so my first student took her, she took a grade 3 exam actually when I was just 20. And she, you know, she did extremely well. And I, you know, I loved it. So I carried on. That was like a work placement. So in the UK, they still do these like sandwich years. So you study for 2 years, you have a year where you're in industry and then you go back again. So I, you know, was teaching then in this sandwich year, went back to university. And then I got a job when I graduated with Boots the Chemist. Have you ever heard of Boots?
Yes, yes. My family's actually English, so I know Boots well.
Okay, okay. So I got a job as an assistant public relations manager that they're running. And it was there where I learned to write.
Right. Write music or write words?
Write words.
Right.
So all of the structuring was sorted out. We'd got, you know, the main form of communication was computers by then. So, you know, the spell checker, and there was these two women who were journalists, and they, you know, they taught me to write.
Right.
They taught me to write.
So you went and worked for Boots and did all that kind of stuff. In your own time, you were still doing a bit of teaching on the side effectively. So we still haven't got to you as a composer, which is now a really kind of crucial part of who you are. So there must have been some kind of catalyst to get you to try doing composing. What was that? Can you remember that story?
Complete accident.
Love it. So, what happened?
I did very well in composition at school.
Okay.
So I was the trial year for the GCSE, and my composition was used by the music board as an example of what a full mark composition was. And so I could do it, but it was instinctive and I had no idea what I was doing. What happened was that I met Heather Hammond at an ECTA event, mm-hmm. and we made a joke about writing a piano book. And I had been doing a little bit of writing for Music Teacher magazine.
Right. Is that the EPTA journal
magazine? No. The Rheingold magazine. Well, Mark Allen now. Mark mm-hmm. Allen group now. And I'd met Chris Walters at an ABRSM conference, and he'd spoken to me and found out that I'd had this former career as a PR. And so obviously I could write. And he said, oh, you need to do some writing for me.
And he was talking about marketing writing, words again.
No, we were talking about I was piano teaching by that point, you know, quite a lot of it.
Right.
And he gave me a column called Ideas Bank.
Ah, great. Okay. So writing for the magazine.
Yeah, writing for the magazine. And he was fantastic. I mean, when I do feel I owe, you know, my writing career to Chris Walters initially, because the poor man, what he was having to edit to begin with. and I think editors can worry about changing your work, you know. And I'm going, no, it's fantastic. You're making it look so much better. he introduced me at an ABRSM conference to a new senior editor for Bloomsbury. And he said, this is Stephanie Matthews, this is Karen. And she spoke to me about what I was doing, and she brought up Heather's flute books. And I just said, as a joke, I said, oh, we've always joked about writing a piano book. And she said, can you send me some sample pages? And that was it.
Extraordinary.
And so I never tried to get something published. It all happened by one great big accident. I went to Heather and said, oh, it looks like we might have a gig, not really understanding the significance of it. We basically put the sample pages together using both our sets of students. And that was the beginning of Get Set Piano.
Fantastic. Which I happen to have here. The book's arrived. Look at this.
Oh.
So thank you very much for those. Fantastic. So Get Set Piano is the method that Heather have put together.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And when was that released? Quite recently?
No, 2013.
Okay, great.
That happened in 2013. That was the second book I did. The first book was just something I did with music sales at the time.
Right, okay.
And it was a quick, very different project for restarting adults. And so, yeah, that was the first main books that we did. And it was written directly with children. And in fact, in book two, you'll see there's a piece called Fun Fiona. It's for Olivia. Olivia was an original Get Set Piano student, and she's taking her grade 8 in a few months. So
wow.
The children have come through the books, and every week we would go with another piece and we would try it out. And basically, if you go on to Collins Music Get Set Piano free resources, there's an enormous amount of free material, because you can't ever get enough in a book, and there's all this masses of other stuff that was written as well, and it's written week by week with children.
Wow, fantastic. So truly, truly tested as well, which is so important, I think, particularly when you come to write a method. But I've got to ask you, Karen, writing a method, now, number one, I know that it's an exhausting long process. I mean, you obviously did it over a period of time, which is great, but there is so much competition in this market. So what did you do that you felt was different in Get Set Piano from some of the other methods?
Well, I think that you ultimately have to approach a book with humility, and you have to not, and also, you know, this concept of confirmation bias, Tim, confirming what you already believe.
Mm-hmm, right.
So what I did, I have a highly, highly analytical mind. So I got about 45 methods out on the floor. I looked at the source documents. I looked at Walter Carroll's original stuff. I looked at Mrs. Kerwin's stuff in the 1800s.
Oh, wow. You really went back in time.
Oh, I really went back in time.
You're talking like the Cherney exercises and all of that stuff.
Yeah, 599, you know.
Yeah.
And actually thought, what is the best here? What are the main principles of pedagogy that are timeless, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what am I learning? You know, and Heather was doing the majority of the composing. I did quite a bit in there in the end. But, you know, what is happening here with these children? And it was trying to sort of put the truth that was discovered in the method. And the idea was, well, if this has worked with all of these children, then there's a very good chance it's going to work with other children. And so that's what the unique selling point of the book is, that it's also multisensory. So I did a load of training. So because I'd not been a music graduate, I was paranoid about not having, you know, qualifications. So I'm Kadai qualified. I've done all levels of piano teaching diplomas. I went back and redid all my theory exams. You know, I did mountains of it. And I think the thing was that because of some of the stuff, like in my later books for Faber, because I had to go back and learn how to do harmony and learn all of this theory, it was very much easier to write books. Because
you'd been in that position.
Mm. I'd been in that position. And I was debunking the things that had completely confused me as a learner.
Mm.
In a way that was understandable and accessible, you know?
Yeah, it's another similarity with my own journey. When I really started to get back into piano teaching, I took on a grade 4 student and had no idea what I was doing. This was my first, when I was starting to realize that, yeah, maybe I kind of like this idea. And it was at that point that I not only got help from my own childhood teacher, but I then went and did masterclasses and courses, and I went to lectures, and that's when I started my blog. I started writing blogs and recording videos and having lessons myself and thinking about doing my MSA diploma. And I totally understand that idea that there's kind of two reasons. One, you want to get better at the thing that you've suddenly found this passion for. And number two, you do have that sense of people won't believe me, or I don't feel like I'm true, or I'm an imposter. Yeah, because I haven't done 10 years of conservatory study in university.
Absolutely.
Work. Yep. Totally get that.
And so, you know, I mean, I remember one year, and the children are very little at this point. So we have 3 children.
Oh, your own children were very little.
Are very, very little. So, you know, when, and a lot of the books have been written with them at the same time.
Mm.
So they have definitely Get Set Piano. The first book has got Anna in it and little Naomi. You know, both the children are in the material. In fact, Anna's even, you know, the book two, there's a swimming teacher chant, and it's Anna making up words at her swimming lesson. So our children, you know, I'm immersed in a child's world because I'm a young mum.
You know, I get it. And that comes through when you also look, well, you look at how you've laid it out, but also, I mean, the illustrations, I know you didn't personally do the illustrations, but who is it? Julia Patton. Wow, aren't they? They're so good.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful. And I think that's the other thing about having a book publisher. So I don't know, have Colin sent you my first piano book, the new ones?
No.
Yeah, well, the new ones, which are actually in my cabin, because I didn't bring up my pile with me, they're even more beautiful. Mm. I mean, they're like a work of art. And that's because that's a book publisher that, you know, does illustrations of books. And my view is that I absolutely love working with young children. You know, I'm in seventh heaven in a reception class, you know, and I think music needs to be magical.
Mm.
And, you know, and in the piano lesson, it needs to be fun and engaging. And I often talk about with our own children to get them to eat vegetables. I used to get the food blender out and hide all of the vegetables.
Yeah, I'll do that.
So they didn't see them.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And I always think as a teacher, I need to hide all this musical nutrition within the teaching, you know?
Yeah, I do. I really like the analogy. So you talked just a moment ago about your passion for teaching children, and I believe you're doing a lot of that now. So tell us, what kind of work are you doing? I don't think you're doing the PR marketing work anymore. Are you fully into music?
Yeah, so I have a mixed portfolio. So I actually lead music in a primary school. So I teach classroom music from reception up to year six, which is, you know, 4 to 11. And I'm Kadai trained. So in the early stages, primarily that's Kadai musicianship. But I also do some orph in there. And we do some jazz plays. And we do composition as well. The children compose, you know, 5-year-old children do compose their own rhythms.
Mm. I love that integrated approach where you pull all the best. I do the same thing. What's great about Kadai? Let's grab that. Let's grab some off ideas from here. You know, kind of the rhythm, the speaking sentences in rhythms, and then moving that to a percussion instrument, and then moving that to a piano and things like that. I mean, that's very simplifying, of course, but I think there's such great value in all of that for any teacher, regardless of whether it's a classroom or independent studio teacher.
Yeah, and I think I run a little choir in the school as well. Well, I did pre-COVID and hope to again. And we have these whole school singing assemblies. So there'll be well over 200 children in a room singing together, singing in parts, you know. And I mean, I just think it is just the most wonderful thing in the world to get children sing beautifully in such a big group, you know. And it's magical.
Mm.
It's magical.
And so, Karen, that's full-time work for you?
No. I do it over, well, it's a very, very long day, and I go across, you know.
So it's one day a week doing that?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay, yep.
And so it's a monstrous day. It's a monstrous day.
Sounds exhausting.
And then I, over here, we call it peripatetic teaching. So I go into another school and teach piano. Sort of with the music service here. And then I've got private students as well.
Right.
So I've got 30 private students.
Wow.
And then I have, you know, the primary school. But I do quite a bit of sort of compositional coaching as well. So my Academy Trust has put me into their secondary school to do composition work in there for examinations. And so I'm really fortunate in that I get this whole view from like 3 to 18, but not just piano, but the whole music education world, you know, sort of A-level, GCSE, you know.
Yeah, which gives you a good understanding of the end goal, I guess, for a lot of the work that you're doing right from the start. If we know where we're trying to get a student, and we're talking about this in a webinar coming up as well, whereby, you know, post-method book, however long you go through the method book, you can just, it's quite difficult to know necessarily what music to start with. You can kind of just start throwing pieces at students that you've enjoyed or you learned as a child. But to be much more effective, to have that direction and to know the goal can, I think, really make a difference. And that's clearly something that you get an experience of.
Well, if you think about sort of Kadai, the Kadai approach, which is going from the known to the related known, and also the prepare, you know, the preparation, the presentation and the practice. I'm always thinking, and I love this about my writing, my books, and also my teaching. I'm embedding, so I'm doing lots of practice, but I'm also creating fertile ground for learning. So I'm thinking, okay, what do I do to enable a student to be able to move out of hand position? What do I need to do to actually write a piece of music that then enable them to play semiquavers in time? And so I'm, you know, it's very, very premeditated in terms of the way that I am writing music and I am preparing my books, you know? Yes.
The other thing that I can't help but bring up is the balance and how you seem to be managing an incredibly packed portfolio of activities. You're also a mum, and yes, your children might be a bit older, but that job never really stops. And you mentioned earlier, a little side note, you said, oh, I'm back into painting. So have you got any tips or thoughts on managing this kind of balance, work-life balance, for want of a better word?
I think the first thing that you do need to do is to recognize that ultimately self-care is the most important thing. And to think, well, actually, you know, what am I as a human being? And being human is actually about sort of integrating in the world that we're in, you know? And the problem with a lot of work is that we're in our heads, you know, when we're doing it. Yes, we're integrating with other people. So I got myself some coaching.
Right.
I went to see somebody and I took myself in hand.
Was that life coaching?
Yeah, general sort of coaching.
Right.
And looking at what my value system is, you know, what is my main value? Well, my main values are, you know, my family. You know, I've been with my husband for 30 years in September. It's a long relationship, you know, and, you know, the children are 14, 18 and 22. It's very important. Is that making sure that they get enough, you know, they didn't choose to be born.
Absolutely. Yeah, it also sounds like you've got a bit of separation, because we actually started this conversation in your cabin, which I assume is a separate building out the back of your house or something. Do you find it helps to have a workplace and a home place?
Yeah, and I have two mobile phones. I have a work mobile. I have a non-work mobile. I have the cabin, which is my workspace, and I have my non-workspace. And in fact, you know, I started the painting because I was finding, in fact, I might be able to take the computer and show you one.
Okay. Don't worry about it now, because most people are listening to this. They won't, unfortunately, won't be able to enjoy it.
All right. Okay. So basically, I realised that I just didn't have a hobby that wasn't music.
Yeah. We can all associate with that.
Friends.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it mainly started just before lockdown that I started painting again. And I hadn't painted for 30 years.
Wow. Good on you for getting back to it.
Yeah, and I do one or two a month now.
Fantastic. Well, look, our time is running short, and I did want to talk a little bit about your books as well, some of the ones that you've just created, and maybe a sneak peek of what's coming up if there's anything in the pipeline. But before that, I just want to mention one thing. I just want to circle back to how you kind of fell into this composing role. I just want to bring up how important networking is and has been for you. And I think there is a real fear in a lot of teachers, particularly independent teachers. We are the masters of our studios. We're confident and all that kind of stuff, but we can be super shy when we go to conferences or just not going to conferences. I mean, obviously all that's changed a bit with pandemics. But have you got any thoughts? Have you found that as well? It sounds like that's been just crucial for your evolution.
I really love people. I really love people. And I mean, even on Twitter last week, there was a lady who was saying how exhausted she was in her pregnancy. And I reached out to her because I could identify with that. You know, I was a piano teacher being pregnant and how tired I was. And I just, as a writer, I've always reached out to other people and as a teacher, and I just see it as making another friend. And I mean that genuinely, you know, it's helping. I'm very supportive of other professionals' work. You know, I will actively say on camera that I love June Armstrong's composition, you know, the Irish composer. It's beautiful pedagogical work. You know, I very much enjoy using, you know, Pam Wedgwood's new jazz book, you know.
Love Pam.
And I sort of am very happy to celebrate other people and what they're doing. And I think, you know, when it comes to networking, I just think it's about making friends and being supportive as a big community. And I do think that the music world, from the outside where I look, you know, I don't call myself a performing pianist. You know, I'm a music educator. I'm a teacher. But I think it's quite a competitive world. I get the impression, you know, whereas for me, it's just about other beautiful human beings and how interesting to get to know them and see what they're doing and to learn from them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, humility is so important as a teacher. You know, these, you know, I will admit if I can't do something and I need help, I will go to colleagues and say, I'm struggling with this, you know, and I think it's about that willingness to be open.
Echoes my own thoughts very much. It's one of the reasons why I love building communities online, for that exact reason. We all share in the knowledge. Keep our studio doors open, learn from each other. So crucial and so fulfilling for everyone.
Yeah. Connection is the ultimate thing.
I agree. And so much more important.
Yeah. And that's why the pandemic's been so hard.
Yeah, that's right. So, Karen, I'd love to just have a really super quick finish look at your latest books, which your publisher sent me, which is the Piano Trainer series.
Yeah.
These look amazing, by the way, and they come in three. So you've got a pair of foundation books, intermediate pianist and advanced pianist books, and you've also got a piano trainer scales workbook, which is kind of looks like all these scale challenges. They look kind of fun. So do you want to give us the super short overview of this series and why you put it together?
Well, I did quite a lot of work with Christine Brown in the later era of her life, and she was quite a respected pedagogue, a very respected pedagogue. And the books basically are a manifestation of all of that work. I've been training in teaching pedagogy, and it's my teaching curriculum in print.
Oh, wow.
It's very holistic. So all of the technique, the foundational technique, is in the foundation books. And also about the main periods of music are in there. David Blackwell is an amazing arranger. And we've got this thing called musical time travel that's in there. And beautiful classical pieces of music arranged. So hopefully children will be introduced to that world. So that's the foundation stage with David, who's a master arranger.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next three books are basically the 25 styles of music. All of it has the theory, the technical work, the musicianship all weaved in there, and debunking theory, an easy way to be able to write ornaments, harmony, it's all in there.
I see the intermediate book one, you've got tango, march style, minuets, lullabies, jigs, boogies. That's really cool. So you get experience in a number of pieces. You've got a quick learn, a repertoire piece, and then scales or activities related to, in the next book, nocturnes, reggae. See, I love reggae. It's so fun. Gospel, 5/4 time. Yeah, really cool. I like that approach.
And also there's quick learning there, because how many books do you buy and the child can't get through the whole book? So there's only three or four pieces in there at the level that they're playing at. There's all this additional repertoire that they've not played at the time that reinforces a sense of style. You know, don't play the Beethoven sonata if you've not done the minuet and trios as well, in my view, you know?
Right.
So there's again, that's very much a Kadai approach. It's the, you know, building that foundation and understanding. The advanced books were written with Mark Tanner.
Oh, yeah, no, Mark.
I'm not a performing pianist, he is. So in those books, we go back to musical periods, but we actually look at the changes in the piano. So we look at how the piano has moved in time, and I pull in architecture and art and everything else. There's composer galleries in there. So you've got different levels of the composers work in one place. And also, we are not rehashing what's in every other book. So there's a lot of hidden gems in there. I have nearly 3,500 books in my cabin. So I've been through mountains of stuff. So, and the scale book is basically all the scales in one place and everything I had to do to actually be able to play a scale.
Fantastic. I mean, you've of course completely undersold that because we're running out of time. But I mean, that is a magnificent, a fantastic resource. And so detailed and a great reference book for any teacher, regardless of how it fits in with the other three books in the series. You could just buy that and use it alongside anything that you do. But I really would encourage teachers to explore this.
There's a free challenge there as well, where you have your own teacher assess scale system. So you as the teacher say what scales the student's playing with, you know, the repertoire they're doing. There's free certificates, you know, and you're the master of your students' technical curriculum through there.
Oh, that's fantastic. Great opportunities for teachers to explore. Where should they go to find out more about your music?
So if you can visit the Faber website, it's all on there. All of the books are on Faber Music, and also Collins Music are there. And I must mention, I've done a book with ABRSM called Skills Builder, mm-hmm. Piano Star Skills Builder, and also the other Piano Star books and the Encore series for ABRSM as well. So,
oh yeah, I enjoyed playing the Encore series. That was a little while ago.
Yeah. No. The Encore series fits exactly with the piano trainer. There's no duplicate repertoire. So you can use them as repertoire books alongside.
Fantastic. Oh, well, it's been wonderful to hang out with you today. I'm glad we got our internet sorted when you came in from the cabin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Karen. And we look forward to sharing. We'll share links to your books and where they can be found online in our show notes. And look forward to keeping in touch with you as new projects evolve.
No, thank you, Tim. Thank you. Good to hear about you too. And you're,
thank you.
You've got more in common than I thought.
I know. We have. Well, I really hope you enjoyed meeting Karen as much as I enjoyed interviewing her today. And remember that if you're interested in your chance to win her books, the books that we talked about today, the Get Set Piano and also the Piano Trainer Series books, then head over and make sure you're in our Top Music Teaching group. because over there, we're going to give you the details of how you can be in the running for us to post these to you wherever you are in the world. It's a sweet deal. There's hundreds of dollars worth of books right in my hands here, and I can't wait to give it away to some of our top music teachers. Next week on the podcast, you're not going to hear from me. The podcast is going to be taken over by one of my team members. The wonderful Sarah Buckley, our marketing manager here at topmusic.co, is taking over the episode. I've got no idea what she's going to be doing, but I'm sure it's going to be heaps of fun. So make sure you tune in next week, same time, same place. Until then, I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast. I will see you in a couple of weeks' time. Bye-bye. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.